I think we have enough members to get started, so welcome to the House Transportation Committee. We are now in session, and members, it's good to see you back, and some clean shaven, and others on the fence.
Oh my God, that's right.
And we'll go ahead and,
We could start with.
Yeah, why don't we have a couple of bills to introduce, drafts to introduce as committee bills. So, with that, Patrick, if you would, I will open a work session.
Thank you, Madam.
Possible introduction of committee bills.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We have two LC drafts before you. LC 1984 establishes a tax on motor vehicle rentals and deposits the revenues raised to the State Highway Fund. That's one of them. The other one, LC 2816, eliminates the requirement that ODOT notify every person who has a certificate of pending application to operate as a for-hire carrier and to conduct a hearing when a person applies for issuance, transfer, or extension of a certificate. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Committee, these are obviously just to be introduced as committee bills. It does not commit you. It doesn't commit us to them in any way. And so any questions?
A motion, Madam Chair?
Certainly.
I move LC 1984 and 2816 to be made committee bills.
We have a motion to introduce LC 1984, dated 1-2209, and LC 2816, dated 2-1009, as committee bills. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing none, they are introduced as committee bills, and I'll close the work session and open a public hearing on House Bill 2236. Patrick.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll shuffle my papers a little bit here. Thank you. House Bill 2236 authorizes the Department of Transportation to participate in an alternative fuel project.
Thank you. Mr. Jim Witte. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Witte. I'm ODOT's manager of the Office of Innovative Partnerships and Alternative Funding. And a couple of you have heard a little bit of this in another hearing, informational hearing in another committee, so I apologize for that, but it's going to be a little bit more expanded today. The office in which I'm the manager works with something called the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program. And it creates public-private partnerships where we can use private capital for transportation projects. And that's important to today's bill to understand that. We basically take assets of the department, primarily land, and then invite private capital in to accomplish a project. Today's hearing is about creating the alternative fuel distribution network. We've done similar types of projects, for example, the solar highway, which puts solar panels on the right-of-way. That's a public-private partnership project. And then we're working to create electric charging stations also. To accommodate the coming shift to less polluting electric vehicles. The department, with these kind of efforts, is trying to do its part to reduce the 38% greenhouse gas emissions contribution the transportation sector makes. But let's go on to the alternative fuels network. You may have noticed that getting widespread distribution of alternative fuel vehicles is rather challenging, and we think we know why. You may have a supply of fuel, and you may have access to vehicles that could use that fuel, But there's a distribution network that's simply hard to put together. Essentially, distribution of fuels is essentially a private sector activity, and we're not proposing to change that in any way. But it's difficult for that to develop because there's a market that needs to develop for that to form. And so it's kind of a cart before the horse thing. The vision behind House Bill 2236 is to develop an alternative fuel distribution backbone along key roadway corridors to incubate demand for alternative fuels. As the theory is that as the market demand for alternative fuels vehicles increases because of the availability of this backbone, a privately owned and operated commercial distribution network will naturally form around it. House Bill 2236 clarifies ODOT's authority to construct alternative fueling stations on ODOT property. The most helpful sites may well be rest areas because of their convenient location and easy access from the highway and even spacing. For urban areas where there are no rest areas, the department will likely select locations on existing ODOT property. Now, ODOT cannot use highway funds for this purpose under constitutional constraints. That's why we intend to use public-private partnerships. Private vendors would design, construct, and finance the alternative fuel station projects and then operate and maintain them at their own expense. To make the operations of these stations financially viable, the private sector vendors would build and operate food, beverage, and sundries enterprises at their own risk. The department intends not to compete with private sector operations already providing alternative fuel distribution services. Existing commercial station operators would have the ability to provide alternative fuels either at the rest areas or at their own interchange operations and truck stop operations. If an existing commercial fueling retailer nearby offers an alternative fuel planned for installation at an ODOT rest area, ODOT intends not to procure a public-private partnership for those particular fuels at that site. For example, the truck plaza at Aurora currently has B99 biodiesel. So we will not offer B99 biodiesel at the Baldock rest area south of Wilsonville. That's an example. Okay. Now, how are we going to start this whole thing? Well, we came up with the idea of the alternative fuels corridor along Interstate 5, primarily because it's a heavily traveled route between metropolitan areas. It's also designated a corridor of the future by the Federal Highway Administration and largely because of the vision for an alternative fuel corridor there. ODOT engaged Washington and California for a three-state project. So you'd have an alternative fuels corridor from the border of Mexico to the border of Canada. We signed a memorandum of understanding to do this last September for the full thing. And Oregon and Washington are currently planning a joint procurement of public sector partners. We have similar public-private partnership laws. Actually, they copied ours pretty close. And so we can do that pretty easily, have one procurement for those two states. As far as which fuels will be offered, we're not quite yet certain how this will roll out because there are a lot of alternative fuels out there. We expect initially to provide biodiesel and ethanol at the higher blends not available in very many places. And perhaps as the electric vehicles come forward, and we expect them soon, the state should be buying these vehicles in 2010, and then 2012, we understand from the automobile companies they'll be offering them for the general public and mass marketing. Compressed natural gas is another option because of the readily availability of that fuel. Now, the governor has an arrangement with the province of British Columbia for at least one alternative fuel station in Oregon to be hydrogen fuel cell refueling, and so we would look to do that as well, although that's quite a challenge. Hydrogen refueling is not a simple thing scientifically. Anyway, as other alternative fuels get to the point of viability, they would be added. Now, the station appearance, we don't expect it to look massively like a gasoline station, probably many fewer pumps, especially early on, because there won't be a great demand early on. We're trying to incubate demand. Initial sales volume will be low. So there'll be a small footprint, and we're counting on that, so we have minimal impact to the rest areas. We have certain federal obligations to maintain certain number of parking spots, if we want to keep that in place. The primary question has been economic viability. Will this work? And because we expected it might work, but we didn't know for sure, so we hired a financial advisor, Sperry Capital, to determine whether it would or not. And their report just came forward, and you should have an executive summary attached to your testimony. And, Madam Chair, I have a copy of the full report for you, and upon request, we can give it to any member of the committee. The financial advisor's final report provides a business model for alternative fuel stations. After determining the capital and operating costs for the alternative fuels corridor, Sperry Capital concludes that an alternative fuels corridor along Interstate 5 would be feasible for private operation without direct public investment, provided food and sundries may be sold in addition to alternative fuels. That's their conclusion. They interviewed potential private partners, such as truck stop operators and major food service companies, as well as investors, such as private equity funds and private equity and infrastructure funds. Sperry also concludes after these interviews that these private sector vendors and investors would indeed be interested in bidding on a public-private partnership and a multi-state procurement to provide these services. Now, I mentioned the state of Washington currently has similar procurement authority as Oregon on this point. They've also undertaken an economic feasibility analysis as well, and you should have with the testimony I provided you an executive summary of that, and I can provide that to you as well, Madam Chair, as well as anybody on the committee who's interested. They also conclude that the Interstate 5 alternative fuels corridor is viable. Now, I want to be clear about the kind of authorities we need to have and don't have yet. Well, we're looking for clarification of the Oregon law here with this Bill 2236. We do need a change in federal law, because if you're selling alternative fuels at rest areas, you now run into a prohibition against commercialization of the rest areas. We've been working with the Federal Highway Administration, or we do have the Federal Highway Administration's support, but we do need to ensure that this new administration that came into office is supportive of this as well. There is a pathway available for an exception from federal law without a statutory change, although I can tell you that Congressman DeFazio and Congressman Oberstar have indicated that they would be looking at this as a possibility in the next surface transportation authorization bill. So what does the bill do? I indicated twice now that it clarifies the department has the authority to implement the alternative fuel network on ODOT property under the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program and the department's general authority. The bill also establishes certain sideboards for the network, such as lease term and limiting the extent of commercialization. To assist in completing the projects in a timely way, the bill allows establishment of alternative fuels facilities at roadside rest areas without undergoing the land use exceptions process. During this time of great change for Oregon and the nation, it behooves the department to apply creative solutions to the climate change problems the transportation sector now faces. As we are also in a period of economic strife, it would certainly help if the department implemented these solutions with private investment rather than taxpayer dollars. Bolstered by the positive economic feasibility studies, the department believes launching an alternative fuels corridor along Interstate 5 that leads to an alternative fuel network, Oregon can take a significant step towards moving to an alternative energy future. We still need federal approval for the rest area sites, but the department has good reason to believe the statement this state's legislature makes by passage of House Bill 2236 would lead to acceptance of the proposal at the federal level. Now, others are likely to come forward with other ideas today for establishing alternative fuel stations along Oregon's highways. We will be pleased to entertain any additional ideas to meet the objective of an alternative fuels corridor. If you need any additional comments from me following the testimony, I would be very pleased to be offered the opportunity to comment.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Questions? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Witte, I don't want to rain on your parade. I support renewable fuels and research and development into those, incentives of various sorts to get the market selling it with tax code, maybe flexible land use. I certainly support clean fuels, energy to independence and less carbon, biomass using grass, seed, straw, or forest biomass, enterprise zones, as long as they have prevailing wage trigger at $5 million. But I got to tell you, I'm going to be straight up with you. I have grave reservations about this. We have the infrastructure already, and we have filling stations all over the interstate. And I think those are the folks we should be incenting to get into this somehow. So I'm not saying no to what you want to do. I really don't think the state should use our property to get into the filling station business. That kind of bothers me when we already have all these businesses out there that, quite frankly, you are suffering, and if we're going to do something, let's help them provide this. And I'm not against doing this. It's providing the types of fuels. Don't get me wrong. But I have grave reservations on how you're trying to go about it here. Yeah. I just want to be straight up with you.
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Yes.
Representative Schaffler, I think it would be preferable to incent existing businesses. Simply, it'd be easier. Unfortunately, ODOT cannot do that with our existing funding. Under the Constitution of the State of Oregon, we're not allowed to use money generated from the use of a motor vehicle for this purpose. We simply cannot do it. And so we're looking for another alternative. That's why this is on the table.
If I may.
Yes.
Well, we can do tax code incentives right now. We can do flexible land use. We can if we want to. And ODOT just not do anything. We as a legislature should try and help these businesses get into this. We don't need ODOT to get into it.
And Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, don't disagree.
Okay, good. Thank you. Just want to clarify.
Representative Widener.
Yeah, I just had, when you're doing your economic study, thank you, Madam Chair, before I forget. But my question is, what's the percentage of sales of food versus fuel? Because as soon as you insert food into this, you're hurting every business out there, because it's a lot easier to pull into a rest stop and pick up your candy bar and your soda, and they're not going to buy the alternative fuels. They're buying their food from these companies, and I would jump on this in a heartbeat as a business owner to have my little 7-Eleven in every little rest stop around. So this is something we need to look at serious, because this is going to damage a lot of businesses, because it's in and out, and I don't know if you guys looked at this very heavy and weighed out, but I think you're going to find your food sales way surpass your fuel sales, and that's the way it shouldn't be that way.
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, I read the executive summary, or the entire report. Again, this weekend to be fresh, and I can't answer your question in that I don't have the percentages in my head, but I can provide you the report and actually provide you the answer. As soon as we can, we'll circle it and let you know where that is.
Would be good, because yeah. I'm sure every business would like to jump on this opportunity.
Madam Chair, there's a difficulty with using alternative fuels at the rest areas without some kind of commercial operation along with it. And the reason is you'd have to have some employee there who's not going to be available much. And at rural Oregon, many years ago, or probably currently actually, and I grew up in Coos Bay, so I remember this, you had to have a store next to your pump, because they didn't pump a lot of fuel. And they wouldn't pump a lot of fuel here either, initially especially. And so you have to have something for the employee to do. And so there's a difficulty with just having the fuels alone, a challenge to it. But I'm sure you appreciate that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your comment, Mr. Witte, that you just made, because that is the challenge that I believe is faced by every every fuel station in rural Oregon and outside of the corridors that are obvious. And I'm a little concerned we have a chicken before an egg. We are trying to encourage people to buy these by putting fueling stations in before they bought them on a business model that is untried. And when we've got people who I believe would be very excited about offering alternative fuels if people will come in and buy them from them, and they have the infrastructure already there. They have the grocery store. They have the personnel. There are fueling stations all over the place, and I guess I kind of agree with Representative Schaffler. Let's encourage them to get into this business rather than take up our public facilities to basically put them in competition with these folks. I have some real reservations, but I appreciate where you're coming from on this. We want people to use alternative fuels. The problem is, do we get the chicken or do we get the egg, and how do we get there? Thank you.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Witte, just since we're into the chicken and the egg argument,
I brought up the chickens and the egg.
I just want to know: is there an egg? Are there vehicles out there already? I mean, the assumption here is that these things don't exist. I think kind of the predicate of this question is that these cars don't exist, the hydrogen vehicles don't exist, whatever they are don't exist. And if we put these stations in, then maybe these things will come into existence. But it's my understanding that, to some extent, these vehicles are already out there ready to run on alternative fuels, that that industry is actually far ahead of the kind of fuel distribution network. And we're not talking about the chicken and the egg, but we're talking about maybe potentially the fuel distribution system being the impediment towards seeing alternative fuel vehicles on the roads. Am I mistaken in that understanding?
Madam Chair, Representative Call, you are not. There are the fuels I mentioned have vehicles available, or vehicles can be converted to be used for these fuels. There may be fuels that don't have a vehicle associated with them, and I didn't mention them today, but there are others too. Yes, I think you're correct.
Thank you.
Representative Schaffler.
One more comment. I saw compressed natural gas in here. If there's a rise in demand for compressed natural gas, we better get on building that terminal and that pipeline.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, if you don't mind hanging around in case the next testimony. Oh, actually, before you leave, I have had the privilege of chatting with a couple people that are out here and coming forward to testify. And I guess I wanted to know whether ODOT has actually had a discussion with the truckers or the fuel dealers on how we should go about doing this.
Madam Chair, I personally haven't, but I know other people in ODOT have.
Okay. Thank you. So, thank you, and we'll bring up the... Yes. Paul Romaine and Bob Russell.
The loyal officer.
I was trying to figure out the duo. Dynamic duo. That's what it was. I could not remember what it was.
That's the nicest thing anybody said to me all day.
Well... Not we'll
me.
See. I have Paul's name first, but whichever one wants to start.
Well, I'll start off, and then Russell will clean up whatever mess I make here. So, I'm Paul Romaine. I'm an attorney in Portland, and I'm here representing the Oregon Petroleum Association. We're the jobbers and dealers, gasoline and other fuels out there. Madam Chair, we and members of the committee, we oppose this bill, not because the concept isn't good, it's just it's totally unnecessary. If you read this bill, Section 3 of the bill, it basically says, and all the economic reports, it says if you build a truck stop, then people will stop there. Gosh, that's news to our people. We've been operating these things for a long period of time. There are these facilities out there already. Yes, we did have a conversation with ODOT regarding this 2 weeks ago. we were not approached ahead of time to talk about, you know, what's the right way to go about doing this thing. We appreciate what they're trying to do. Everybody is trying to get into the new fuels. And again, it's the cart, the horse, where do you put it? How do you get, to get the cart to move, you need to put the horse in front of it, not behind it. And it's, this seems to be a push cart, not a pull cart. What we're trying to do, what we would like to do with ODOT or with anybody, is if you have some good ideas about alternative fuels that there really isn't a market for, then let's look at incentives for us to put that in on an experimental basis to move forward. Don't go out and say, we'll never do it, therefore we need to take the rest areas. And by the way, the only way we can make this work is by turning the rest area into a truck stop, basically, and go forward that way. That's the most expensive way to go about doing this. If hydrogen is what you want, we have plenty of people with the right incentives who would love to be in that business. We are business people. We would love to make a dollar off of almost anything that we can sell out there. We don't care what it is. We will sell it. I should take that back. It's harmful. Not sell. At least most of us won't sell it. I went to Berkeley, so I never know. Can't answer that. Anyway, what we would ask is that you work with us. The idea of maybe putting in, if ODOT needs legislation to authorize them to do certain things, or if there are certain tax incentives that could work, great, we'll work with you on this. But that's what we need to do, not this bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations, and I, too, support the concept but not the approach that is being proposed today. There's really two reasons why I oppose the bill. One is I also represent the truck stops like Paul. Although we don't call them truck stops today, we call them travel plazas. Because, in fact, they fuel more cars than they do trucks. I mean, they sell more diesel, but they, in fact, fuel more cars. Many of you that travel up and down I-5 are probably familiar with the Pilot Travel Plaza at Brooks. It always has the cheapest gasoline on the I-5 corridor, and people are lined up several deep in order to buy gas there. So we have fueling stations for both automobiles and trucks that are established, and they're all up and down the highway system today. And we think that those fueling stations are going to provide the fuels of the future as well as we develop them. And we should use that existing infrastructure and land and buildings and all that stuff in order to provide the alternative fuels. Another issue from my industry's perspective is that we don't have enough truck parking anywhere in the country, including in Oregon. When trucking was going better than it is today, last year, you could see trucks early in the morning on the on-ramps all up and down the freeways because there wasn't any other place for them to park. If we add facilities at rest areas, use the existing land, we're concerned that we will lose parking that we count on today, and it will further exacerbate the shortage of truck parking in the state. So that is also an issue. I sit on the Global Warming Commission Transportation and Land Use Subcommittee, and last Monday we had a really interesting presentation from a startup company out of Silicon Valley that is actually installing the electrical posts to fuel the electrical vehicles. And we also had PGE there, which has put in a couple of those facilities in the Portland area. And we got a chance to really talk to them informally and see what was going on in the industry. And the electric part is just beginning. And you've got plug-in hybrids. They're running on 110. There are a few plug-in cars also running on 110. They recently established a standard, which is going to be to use 220 to actually charge up the electrical vehicles. Their range today, with what the exception of one car, is so short that they're primarily commuter vehicles. And this company that is now in the business of providing the charging stations, and they said where they provide the charging stations is where people sleep, apartment houses and condominiums and that kind of stuff, and where they work. Because it takes several hours to recharge those vehicles. I asked them, you know, when are these vehicles going to be ready for a road trip? They said, you know, the battery technology is changing, and the method of charging is also changing. Once we get to DC charging, which right now is very expensive, a DC charging station is about $50,000. But once we get to that point, then it'll be like going into the gas station. It'll take just a few minutes. You plug into your car and it'll fuel it up. We're not there yet. Certainly we're not there with hydrogen. We have some LNG trucks that are actually operating in the trucking industry down in the Los Angeles area. There's 10 of them. So those things aren't really happening quite yet. Again, it's sort of the chicken and the egg, but I think that the idea of having a corridor where people could drive along and plug in their hybrid, I don't know that they're going to want to wait 4.5 hours at the rest area so that they can go the next 50 miles is sort of the point that I was trying to make. One of the alternatives that we discussed with ODOT, we sort of aren't very creative, so we used a project that we'd been involved in the past. And there was a community solutions project that I personally was involved in. Gail Achterman was the convener, and it was with the Climate Trust. And the purpose of it was to electrify truck stops so that we could plug our trucks in and wouldn't have to run the main engine overnight and keep the driver comfortable and all of that kind of stuff. We were successful, and we've electrified 3 truck stops, one in Portland, one in Coburg, and one in Klamath Falls. We have 250 spaces that are electrified. We put them in about 3 years ago. The demand now, I mean, at night you can really see that there's a lot of those spaces that are occupied. But sort of the beauty of this thing is the Climate Trust paid for the whole ball of wax. And the reason they paid for the whole ball of wax is what they're in the business of doing is selling offsets to utility companies that are required to buy the offsets under a program that you passed a number of years ago. So it worked just beautifully. It supplied the utility's need for offsets. It fully funded the project. And it sort of answered that question of how do you do the cart before the horse. It gave you a funding mechanism that didn't tap into the general fund or certainly didn't use any highway funds. And I would suggest that that's something that we could explore. We've already done it at truck stops, that we could explore for this purpose as well. So in closing, I just wanted to say that the travel plazas are the fueling stations of today, and we believe they'll be the fueling stations of tomorrow, and we would be happy to enter into a private-public partnership to make sure that we provide alternative fuels at those locations as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Boone?
Can you explain, Bob, how they sell the offsets? What are the offsets?
Basically, they calculated how much carbon would be saved by a truck not idling while it was plugged in during the 10 hours of rest that the driver's required to have. And they had some certified smart person that calculated how long it would take before those spaces would all be filled up because the trucks would have put the stuff on there to plug in, and came up with a number, and then that allowed them to sell those offsets to utility companies, and obviously they'd looked at how much it was costing them to invest and whether or not that it penciled out, and it did.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You made reference to the kind of proper incentives necessary for the existing travel plazas to engage in this type of business. What would you consider an exploratory concept?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I think that the Climate Trust approach, and there's also the Bonneville Foundation that's headed by Angus Duncan, which is basically in the same business, It works in my mind because that's the purpose of those entities, is to stimulate these things, put the cart before the horse, and it's paid for with the RPS that the utilities have to deal with. So that would be my suggestion.
Okay. Seeing nothing else. I guess my question is, and he brought up a little bit about what you would see as possible. If we didn't do this bill, is there a commitment to working with the department to figure out how we can get something going? And I do understand supply and demand. Right. But I think that sometimes we have to start looking like we're moving in a direction.
Madam Chair, you know, it was the same folks that did the Community Solutions program that electrified the truck stops. They've been down that road. I mean, it was interesting. They were sort of suspicious at the beginning, and it was Gail Ackerman that chaired it, who is now the chair of the Transportation Commission. But there was a level of trust that was built, and I have no reason to believe that we couldn't do that again. Those people are also looking to the future. They know that gasoline and diesel are not going to last forever, and that they're going to be providing different fuels. And if there was a way to incent them to get into that business now, I mean, I think that they would be more than happy to do that.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, we've already shown our willingness to work with ODOT on alternative programs a few years ago on the vehicle miles traveled. Frankly, probably one of the most conservative members of the Oregon Petroleum Association joined with ODOT to experiment with basically the how many miles you travel and can you do the tax that way. We're always looking to the future. We would love to partner up and see if there's something good that can happen out there. We are not mired in the past. We'll be happy to move forward.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know who's better for this, Paul or Bob, but just going through and looking at this, and I'm just kind of thinking what would make sense. And with all the gasoline-driven cars that we have now, there's kits out there where you can retrofit those to natural gas and run them on both either natural gas or propane and fuel, so you could go back and forth. Do you think your members, and a lot of them probably already have propane fueling stations, I wonder if that would be something that we look at incentivizing people to convert their cars to run on propane because it emits less carbon and is a little more efficient. But I'm looking at the natural gas prices, and they're cheaper than the propane prices would be, and that's where we need to get the incentive is for the consumer to buy it as well.
Right.
So, and that would probably be something. I guess my question is, would your guys be willing to take those propane tanks and make them natural gas or have both propane and natural gas there?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, we're willing to do almost anything. I mean, if you're in the travel plaza business, if you're in the fuel station business right now, you're not the major oil company. You don't have the profits out there. You're basically living day to day almost in a lot of these places. They're always looking for ways to sell something new, to become more attractive for people to come in, a way to stay in business. So, yeah, we would love to work with any fuel that's out there, especially if it looks like it has legs and will continue into the future.
And I'm still not seeing any, so I just have one more maybe question or comment, and it goes back to your talking about, Mr. Russell talking about parking availability for trucks and the fact that I have been in a few of those travel plazas, and I will tell you there isn't a lot of room in some of them, and I keep thinking, are they really going to be welcoming more cars into their midst, or is there the capacity even?
Madam Chair, you know, there are some of them that have a much bigger back end where the trucks are than they do the front end. But if you'll notice, most of them separate the cars and the trucks. They even have separate entrances and that kind of stuff. And what we're really talking about is providing alternative fuels to both. And I think in most instances, there's sufficient room. I mean, in my mind's eye, that's the fueling infrastructure for the country. 70% of the diesel fuel is sold at truck stops, and I don't know how much of the gasoline, but I'm sure that it's a significant amount. We've already created that infrastructure. It's spaced appropriately and all the rest of that stuff. That's where we're going to get our fuels in the future. And the difference here is do Oregon, Washington, and California want to be the leaders and put the cart before the horse, so to speak? Or do we want to wait until the demand pulls those businesses to make those changes? And I think what we're talking about is we'd like to provide some leadership, and we would like to find a way to provide the incentives so that those fueling stations can provide the alternative fuels before there's sufficient demand to make it commercially viable. And we're certainly willing to do that.
And, Madam Chair, you're talking about vehicles replacing other vehicles, not necessarily. I mean, if you have a gasoline-powered vehicle right now, odds are you're not going to buy an electric vehicle to have in addition to, unless you're, you know, just like to collect cars or something like that. Different fuels will replace other fuels. The car will move, and a different car will replace it. So it's something that our existing infrastructure will be able to handle just fine.
Thank you. Okay.
No. Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you. And Mr. Witte, I don't know if there was anything brought up that...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, all I don't want to say is that ODOT wants to create an alternative fuels corridor. And however it's done, that's what we want to accomplish.
Okay. Thank you. And... that was all I had signed up. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill? Don't all jump at once. Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2236. And thank you, everybody. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2234. And if Amy would like to come up and talk about the amendments and give us an overview. And Patrick, I forgot. You want to tell us what we're hearing?
I can, Madam Chair. House Bill 2234, we heard previously on January 26th. It's the measure to provide authorization to ODOT, or to the Transportation Commission, rather, to adopt administrative rules governing activities on state rights-of-way, roadside rest areas, and scenic overlooks. Violations for penalties accordingly would be a Class B violation with a maximum fine of $360. You have in your packet dash one amendments, as well as a fiscal and revenue statement on those dash one amendments. The fiscal is minimal. The revenue is no revenue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation here again on House Bill 2234. When we were here last, we represented that certainly at least one change needed to be made to the bill, deleting the "and all highway rights-of-way" needed to come out because as drafted, it was overly broad. So the dash one amendment before you continues to have rule writing authority for the Oregon Transportation Commission to write rules. Now it says regarding health and safety in roadside rest areas to perhaps narrow down a bit the scope for which a law enforcement officer could write a Class B violation for this kind of behavior. And also took out that highway rights of way, so now limited only to rest areas and scenic overlooks. So that's what the bill does, and I think reflects sort of the discussion we had in our earlier public hearing on the bill. So the department would appreciate passing that amendment and the bill.
Thank you. Evidently, it has been pointed out that I opened a public hearing and not a work session on this, and I didn't have it posted for a public hearing. So
Implied work session, Madam Chair.
Yes. So with that, I'll go ahead and close, even though I don't know that I could open a public hearing, and open a work session, and my apologies for being distracted. Amy, I had been given a copy of the rules, and I don't know if that's something that everybody in the committee had gotten. Representative Berger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was quite critical of this when I originally saw it because I thought it was wide open and wasn't sure what they were talking about. I have subsequently gotten that list. I'm much assured by it, and I really approve of this Dash 1 amendment to kind of narrow the scope of this thing. I understand what they're trying to get at. I approve what they're trying to get at, and I really appreciate that they went back and made it quite a bit more palatable in terms of the scope, so it wasn't so wide open, and the explanation that I got by email and in person on what kinds of things we're talking about here.
Thank you. It appears that a number of the committee members haven't seen the copy of the rules.
Madam Chair, I have one or perhaps two copies with me. I'd be happy to hand up what I have at the time.
I don't have them, Madam Chair, in my packet, so that doesn't mean.
Any other questions or concerns? Representative Call.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have a few questions.
Okay.
Under Section 2, we're allowing you to adopt rules governing the health and safety in roadside rest areas. Is that substantially different than the rulemaking authority given to you that you used to develop the existing rule that you're trying to enforce?
Madam Chair and Representative Call, it's the only substantive difference I would say is the inclusion of the words health and safety. The department already has rule writing authority. Legislative Council deemed it appropriate to put rule writing authority explicitly here, and then again to address one of the concerns of the committee to include that health and safety piece.
I guess my continuing concern, even though I did have a chance before the meeting today to finally take a look at the rule and read it, is not that I don't agree that there should be an enforcement mechanism, nor making this a Class B violation with regards to people who violate this rule. My concern is that we might be giving to the administrative state the capacity to adopt further rules through the administrative process that would then become Class B violations without anybody in this body ever actually having decided whether or not they would like to see that rule or that law enforced through Section 3. So I guess that's still what my concern is. I'm fine with giving you the power to enforce the existing rule. I guess where my concern lies, just to make very clear, is giving you the power to enforce the existing rule and then also further power to create rules about health and safety and having an independent enforcement mechanism out there that, you know, might get lost in the administrative state. That's my concern. So maybe you can address that concern.
Chair Beyer, Representative Call, you're accurate in that there's continued rule writing authority, so the department could write further rules, amend these rules, delete portions of the rule that currently exists. So that rule writing authority is there. I think you can see from the existing rule, which has been, I think, on the books for many years, it's fairly modest. There's not a whole lot of prohibited activity. The department isn't interested in preventing people from doing a whole lot of things other than, as we talked about before, the things that are really inappropriate for a rest area. And then again, the inclusion of the health and safety piece there. There are things in the rule today that, you know, probably don't fall under health and safety, things that certainly do. So the rule that would be written that could fall under this, the Class B violation, would be limited to the health and safety. And again, the rule that we've had on the books for some time is quite modest, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, my concern is not assuaged. I'll just put it that way.
Representative Widener.
Just kind of since I'm new, and I'm sure Nick's new too, and we didn't get to hear all the things that were going on before because we have quite a few freshmen on this board. But as someone who's been harassed in a rest area, I'm willing to let you have free rein at dealing with the situation.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I mean, just if I could,
yes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
My concern is not us prohibiting behavior nor regulating a person's activities in a rest area. I think people should be safe in rest areas. My concern is who is making the rule and who's enforcing the rule and how transparent and open that process is. And for me, my job as an elected official is to try to do as much of this out in the open as possible. And I do have concern, and I will voice it again, about handing over the power to regulate and make law about that could find people in violation of that law, handing that power over to somebody who's not an elected person. That's a concern I have, and one that I don't think is going to go away anytime soon. So thank you.
If I may respond,
yes.
Chair Byer and Representative Kyle, I understand the concern, and I understand what you're saying. What I would say, too, is ODOT personnel aren't going to be writing these tickets. Law enforcement, who are professionals, who use their professional judgment at all times and have discretion about what kind of tickets to issue. And the rule writing process, of course, and especially in Oregon, is quite open. Lots of public notice, public hearings available, comments can be written. So that is quite an open process.
Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, there's a lot of administrative rulemaking going on. It's certainly not your intention to establish a cap and trade system with this rulemaking authority. So, with that, you have my support.
Health and safety writ large, my friend, is a.
Is there a motion for this?
Madam Chair, I move the dash. Do you have an amendment, correct?
Yes. Dash one.
Dash one amendment to the bill?
Yep. It has dash one amendments to House Bill 2234 have been moved. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, the dash one amendments are adopted.
Is there a, there's no referral, is there?
No.
All right, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2234 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
It has been moved by Representative Schaffler that House Bill 2234 as amended be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments? All right. Clerk, would you like to call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Metz?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative
Edwards? Aye. Representative Schaffler? Aye. Representative Widener? Aye. Vice Chair Fulman?
Excuse.
Vice Chair Paul? No. And Chair Byer? Aye. Having received the majority, House Bill 2234 is passed. And thank you. And with that, where did
a carrier for the bill?
Oh, I suppose we need a carrier for the bill. And I guess I don't want to ask Representative Call to carry the bill.
So. I don't suggest that. I think Widener.
Yes,
I'll second Representative.
He hasn't carried one yet, has he?
He's had personal
Representative
experience.
I'm lucky to carry myself there.
You'll have plenty of help. All right, we're adjourned.